To me, willpower is based on fear. So that fits in with what you're saying. I'm just chunking it up to the fact that we bring willpower in because we're fearful. We're trying not to do something. So we're fearful of doing something. And I think you asked me before, and I said, the best thing is free will, and that is infinite. So
Do you know
using
what?
that was.
I never thought about it like that, but it's so spot on because obviously I gave up drinking several years ago now, but I don't tell myself I'm never going to drink again. I don't fear alcohol anymore. I don't tell myself that I can't have a drink, but I just choose not to now. I just think about how it made me feel, and I'm like, I don't really want to feel like that anymore. So I don't miss it anymore because of, I mean, it was obviously a habit that I got into, but I don't miss it anymore. I just don't think about it anymore.
And you said a really empowering word there. You said you choose. You
Yeah, no,
choose.
but it's no different to when I go to the supermarket and I choose not to pick up a cream, a cream cake. I choose not to do it. I don't fear it anymore.
And that really works for the fact that it's you've brought it into your consciousness. So you're conscious of the fact, and it's not being driven. And that's what I mean by fear. Fear is driven in your unconscious, your subconscious mind. And that's what then, because you build that pre-frame up, you build that premise that you shouldn't have something, then you put lots of coping mechanisms in to stop it happening. So I always say, like, if you put a Mars, because I was a chocoholic, so I'm gonna own up to that. If I put a Mars bar on the desk, I reckon my willpower could last about 2 hours, and then I would eat it. And that's why willpower doesn't work, because two reasons. One, it's based on fear, and the other thing is your unconscious mind will always win out in trying to get certainty and comfort from the eating of that Mars bar. And that's misplaced. But once you become aware of that it's from your own thinking, that's really what awareness is. That's what conscious is that once you become aware of the fact that you don't need that, you have the free will to have a choice. And free will and choice is much more powerful than
And
willpower.
I remember the last time I had a drink, and it was a glass of red wine, and I got part way through it, and I thought, this does nothing for me anymore. I don't miss it. I don't know why I'm holding it. I don't need to drink it. I just put it down. I was like,
And that's a beautiful example of what I mean when I say on a Monday night about don't give it any meaning. If you don't give it any meaning, if you don't build a wall, you don't have to climb over it. You don't have to, people say, how do I get over this wall I've built up, that I made this thing that's going on in my life, so I need to cope with it. And the coping mechanisms that we choose are readily available to us, like food, like alcohol, like chocolate. They're readily, and we don't even think. And that's what I talk about conditioned thinking as well. We're conditioned over our lives to take comfort from food. So why wouldn't we? With the premise that something's wrong. And free will and choice, there's nothing wrong in that. There's nothing wrong in that. That's why you don't even see it. You don't even see it. I don't see chocolate anymore as something that I have to have. I just literally don't see it. When you say, like, when you're on keto, you go down the aisles and you miss out five aisles. You
Yeah,
know,
I don't
it's
see him anymore.
yeah. It's like, you've got two dogs now. I didn't have a dog, so I never went down the dog food aisle or the cat food aisle. I just never went down it. And it's the same now with the chocolate aisle and the crisp aisle and everything. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And that's so much less energy, isn't it? So much like the path of least resistance. You don't have to fixate on something that you made up in the first place. And the day that you become aware that you're making it up and that you are the thinker of that's the day that you're free. And I'd rather be free than have to have willpower.
There you go. There's a nice introduction to the session. We'll actually cut that bit and we'll use that as a trailer because that's a brilliant sort of in really. Well, I'll do the intro now. Good morning, afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the most recent edition of Keto Chapters. We can't remember what number it is. We're not sure, but it doesn't really matter because this has been requested. It's probably the most requested podcast that we get for. When is it? When is Ian coming back on? For anyone that doesn't know, and I'll let Ian do his own introduction as to who and what he is and what he does, but Ian's sort of a big part of Keto Fitness Club. What would we call us? The family. And provides sort of support within the members group to just help us around our thinking. So really briefly, Ian, tell us who, what, and why you do what you do, and then we can crack on, because we took a survey recently of lots of people in the big public group, and I've got some really challenging questions for you.
My name's Ian McGill. I'm a transformational coach, and I've been on the keto journey. And one of the things I noticed when I started the journey was that I had to get my thinking right. And that's all I do in my transformational coaching. I've got NLP techniques I can use, but actually the biggest thing that changed the way I look at life and made my life better was realizing that it's our thinking that gives our experience in life. And that sounds like a very simple statement, but it is all about that. And on a Monday night, we do stuff about thinking, and I keep pointing to the one solution to many problems. And I try to do it in different ways. So it's for me, it's once a person gets an insight, they will see the world differently. And if that's in their nutrition, their movement, or their thinking, life just seems to get better from that insight, from that awareness. I think that's about it, really.
Yeah. And obviously, we've just been having a chat before we did the welcome, and we went straight into it and talking about things like willpower. For years now, I've not had a drink, and I no longer, and I don't need willpower to avoid it. And I don't need I don't feel like I'm missing anything out of my life because of not having it. I'm happy without that in my life. But we talk about willpower, or people talk about willpower as this is what they have to do to be able to follow a diet or follow a, you know, get into a new routine. I'm not sure that willpower is an actual thing. I think if the way I think now, none of it includes willpower.
Yeah. I was looking, when I did a thing on a Monday night about being authentic, I talk about authentic and aliveness. And I put willpower in the same bracket. When I was thinking about how to be authentic, I looked at my bookcase, which has got lots of development books in it and lots of strategies and techniques and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, well, that's the last place I need to look for being authentic. I need to sort of look inside who I am, what my true nature is. And I think it's the same about willpower. Willpower is based on what I would say fear. It's based on trying to stop something happening that you made up in the first place. So actually, looking at what choices you've got to overcome that seems a bit futile, because it doesn't exist in the first place. That the problem that you've made up through your thinking will give you, you have to then do a lot of stuff. You know, for instance, if you want to get rid of willpower, read loads of books on getting rid of willpower, develop yourself how to get rid of willpower, do lots of exercise, mental and physical, to get rid of to have the willpower to stop something. But like you just said then, once you've made that choice and once it comes into your awareness that thing you're doing does not serve you consciously or unconsciously, you have an alignment with your unconscious fear, with your conscious fear. You become aligned with that. And then you just choose to do something else. And that, in my world, is free will. That's free will.
Yeah, and free will rather than willpower.
Willpower, yeah. Free will. There's no scariness in it, so therefore there's no need to do anything to make free will happen. It just happens. And the best time to do free will around anything is to do it with a good feeling. Rely on, you know, I say this on a Monday night, just rely on the feelings that gives you. So in your context, since giving up drinking and choosing to do something else, your life has got better and better and better. And therefore, you reinforce your unconscious mind that you're doing the right thing. And it's just easy. It's something that you don't have to work at. It's the path of least resistance.
So the question that we got asked was, and this is based on the willpower, is how do I improve it? But it's not improving the willpower. It's thinking beyond the choice that you're trying to avoid? Why are you trying to avoid the sugar? Why are you trying to avoid the alcohol? And it's generally because of how it makes you feel. You know, I know that alcohol makes me feel, well, crap, basically.
Yeah. So when you said that, I heard the word control. How do I control something?
Yeah.
And I'll speak to that. You're not in control. You're not in control of anything that you're trying, that you've made up in the first place. It has control over you. And the only way you can stop that is by letting go of it. So you let go of whatever it is you need to let go of. And the best way to do that is to find out why you're doing it in the first place. Become aware of why you're doing it.
Yeah.
So drinking wasn't the problem. Me eating chocolate wasn't the problem. It is what the meaning I gave to that. And some people might need to do that. I would put my efforts into not trying to have more willpower, but I would put my efforts into finding out what is it that is being triggered in me? What is the meaning I'm giving to something? I say jokingly on a Monday night, people say, oh, I feel guilt, I feel shame. So then they're going to have a lot of willpower to stop the thing that they're doing that covers up and masks and distracts from that guilt or that shame or anger even. And I just say it simply, and it's not very keto. I say, well, if you change them words for banana, will it have the same thing? There might be a little bit of guilt. I haven't had a banana for a year now, so it's a good thing to choose. But if you don't give meaning to it, it just seems to dissolve. But I'm not saying deny your feeling, the feeling that caused it in the first place. That's where you put your effort in. That's what you need to make a choice about. Do I want to feel like this? Or do I want to change this?
So for me, it was going to the pub in the evenings and then waking up in the mornings feeling like I'd not slept and feeling like, you know, nothing. I just didn't feel almost human sometimes. I just felt I was going through the routine of, you know, take the kids to school, bring the kids home from school, open a bottle of wine, go to the pub, do the whole thing again. And I was just, there was nothing for me there almost. And that's what I think I was, the reason why I was drinking was because I just felt that there was just nothing there for me. I was missing out on lots of life, but I thought, well, I don't know how to do that anymore. I'm stuck in this routine. And I don't even know what it was on the day that I thought, you know what, I just need to, do you know what it was? I'll tell you what it was. It was walking into the pub and thinking, these people are going to be saying the same things they said yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before, i.e. I need to stop drinking. I need to sort of go home. I need to do this. And I thought, why don't I just do that? Yeah. Why don't I just go and do that? Why don't I just go home and enjoy life with the kids rather than trying to drown out whatever bad thoughts I was having?
And there's two things there, and if I can say the word, it's like we tranquilize ourselves. You know, whatever self-medication we use, we tranquilize ourselves. Yes. It can be anything from watching Netflix to drinking to eating. We tranquilize, and you chose tranquility over that. I like to make that, you know, like words, but you chose tranquility of going home. So actually, you know, metaphorically, going home is what it's all about. It's being at home with your true nature. And that's the most empowering thing in the world. You don't have, think of it like this. As you're drinking and you're going to the pub, you're pulling on a big elastic band. And all you let yourself do is that elastic band pull you home. And there's no effort in that. There's no willpower in that because that's where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. And I suppose the issue we have around food is that we can't live without food.
Yeah.
So I can live without alcohol, you know, and lots of other vices, but we can't live without food. And we end up sort of sometimes getting ourselves in a mess, you know, with the habits that we've got. We get into a habit of eating certain foods. And this is one of the worst things, isn't it, one of the hard things about changing the lifestyle is we've had a habit of 30, 40, 50 years eating certain things. And how do I stop having rice for dinner? How do I not have roast potatoes on my Sunday roast? And we've just got into a habit of putting them on the plate half the time. We don't realize they're even there.
Yeah.
You know, and it is a real concern for people when they sort of like look at the different lifestyles and go, yeah, but what about? And again, I talk about sort of in the workshops, talk about I'm so far down the journey now that for me to break my fast, it's not uncommon for it to be a plate of pan-fried liver or a, you know, a chicken thigh. I'm not looking at the breakfast cereal replacement. I'm looking at, well, it's just a meal.
Yeah.
I've broken the habit of years and years of toast and cereal for breakfast. But again, I suppose it just comes down to sort of that choice, doesn't it? It comes down to that sort of that one thought in your head. Well, I don't have to have cereal. I can actually have, you know, a chicken thigh.
And what comes to mind for me is that that's what I call conditioned thinking, you know, conditioned right. to have three meals a day, conditioned to have breakfast. I work for a breakfast cereal company and it's like
local.
And I don't have breakfast now, and I certainly don't have cereal. So I'm not doing a good advert, but
I'll correct you there. You do have breakfast.
Yeah, but I haven't.
Your breakfast. Yeah.
Yeah. But I haven't had it yet. It's 12:40.
Okay.
And I'm not fasting. It's just the norm. And I'm not hungry. So in ketosis is really good for that. But this thing about habit and conditioned thinking, it's, you know, we were told to clear our plates. We were told if we don't eat our food, the people starving. All part of innocent conditioning. Yeah. And to break away from that, you have to make a choice. And like you said, you've made so many choices. It's been so long since you made that choice. You've even forgot that it's not just willpower's gone. It's more than even free will. It's ingrained in you. You know, I always say, and it's not, it's just what I say, is you have to do something 47 times for it to become a new habit. And everything I do now is new and fresh. Everything, to my music, to my the way I rock up in the world, it's all new and fresh because I've made a choice out of free will, to link it to that, to find new habits. Now, I need to speak to this. We are addicted to things that we do. So I just choose to be addicted to things that serve me, that empower me. I don't choose things that, you know, put on weight or affect my health, which is the biggest reason I did keto. But we still have that. We have to have... Well, let's talk about what addiction is in the unconscious world. You learn things so you don't have to learn them again. It's called generalization in your unconscious mind. When you walk into a room and you see a chair, it doesn't matter if it's a footstool, a beanbag, or a recliner. You've generalized in your head that that is somewhere to sit. So when you see food, you think, well, that's something to eat. And guess what? There's thousands of bits of food to be being thrown at us through marketing, through sales and stuff, all being told it's good for us. So it bypasses our fear receptors in our unconscious mind. And we go, okay, I'll just have some of that. That's okay for me. And my biggest wake up was on your keto workshop, that how bad sugar is, not only for my weight gain, but also for my thinking, for my clarity, for my health. And so you made me aware of that. And once I was aware, I didn't have to have any willpower.
Do we fear breaking our habits?
Absolutely, yeah. It's like...
It just suddenly struck to me there.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Do I have to give up?
Yeah, absolutely.
You almost sort of say that's an addiction, but it's sort of like, well, yeah, but every day I have this. So do I have to give that up?
The one thing that the unconscious mind or the subconscious mind likes is certainty. It likes comfort. It likes certainty. It likes to know where it is. It likes to know that everything's okay. Even if you're in a bad situation, that's more certain than the change.
Yeah.
That's less fearful than the change. So people to make the change have to get proof. You know, I call it a convincer. You have to be, even when I do work with people, getting rid of their phobias or getting rid of, you know, the way they think about certain things, they still need their own convincer, you know. They have to go out into the world and get convinced that it's okay. So keto, for me, the convincer was unbelievable clarity. Unbelievable clarity in my brain. That was a massive...
Yeah, I suppose I talk about my convincer was doing the 3 marathons in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And never feeling like that before. I've done marathons before and I've done training before and I've never, ever felt that way on any other lifestyle. And that, to me, at the end of that, it was my first 6-month period. And at the end of those 6 months, there was nothing that was going to stop me from carrying on this lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because nothing could help me feel any better. It's always emotional finishing a marathon anyway. You always get this swell of emotion, but the fact that I'd just done more marathons in the space of 8 weeks than ever before. I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel great on it. So yeah, and I understand what you mean about that. It's sort of like, you know, everyone has their own light bulb moment with this, whether it is, you know, we've got people in the group that have achieved their lowest adult weight, yeah, you know, 30, 40, 50 years old. You know, that for them is sort of massive. Again, for me, it was just the freedom that I get from running and then realizing that I can do it without all of the issues that, you know, previous have given me.
Yeah, it's almost, there's light bulb moments, but there's also wow moments with the keto stuff. There's wow moments in how good it is. You know, I talked about inflammation. The inflammation, once I was on keto, completely disappeared in my body. And I didn't have to do loads of exercise, loads of stretching. It just went. And that was a wow moment for me.
And obviously something that you've just mentioned there, and it's a regular topic of conversation in the group, and I've posted about it today, is about fasting. You just said, I'm not really fasting. Well, you are fasting because you've not eaten. So that's just a normal fast. It's a daily routine. But we do, again, because of our habits, and yes, because of this conditioned thinking, we do worry that when we wake up and go, well, I'm not hungry, we worry that that's wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like... Yeah. It's completely natural. We don't need to worry about, you know, we need to focus more on how we feel when we're doing, you know, this lifestyle rather than worrying about the rules around it.
Yeah.
You know, because there are no rules. No, there's guidance, there's help, there's a basic principle. But, yeah, you know, again, as I say all the time, what works for me might not work for somebody else. Mine and your lifestyle is completely different. So why should I try and impose on you what I eat in a single day?
Yeah. And it's, if you feel good, then that and you're doing the right thing, that's all you need to do. Mm-hmm. And that seems to make, you know, it makes everything seem better anyway. And you just said then about, it felt like you were talking about personal thinking. You know, what do I do? What do I do to keep the habit up or the good habit of eating well? And then we tend to sort of like, I've seen people post, it says, you know, I've been really good. I've lost five pounds in weight and now I'm reaching for something that I shouldn't be reaching for.
Yeah. You know, you've just preempted it. I know you don't know these questions, but the next question was, I keep self sabotaging. You know, yeah, why do I do this and how do I stop?
Yeah. And it's, well, the simple answer for me to stop it is not to have anything to self-sabotage about. And that goes back to the original thing about if you're not using willpower, but you're using free choice and you're not thinking about the fact that you have to have something to cope with something. You know, I call it on Monday nights, feel it to heal it. And if you get real with what actually the feeling is, so simply, I was a chocoholic because I was using chocolate to replace love. Now that's I've chunked that up, but I don't mean love in the grand sense of the word. I'm actually talking about self-love, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it can be in a moment. We think, okay, yeah, I've got self-love now, and now I'm sitting watching the telly, and unbeknown to me, I'm watching a subliminal thing that's advertising something that's triggering something in me to get a comfort dopamine release. And before you know it, you've gone up and reached for some contraband, you know, and you can get rid of that contraband.
Curly whirly.
Yeah, exactly. Reach for something. And the good thing about being on keto, when you're on ketosis and you're not even buying stuff, is you know, some days I've got stuff for my son and I can look at it for months and not even be tempted by it. And then some days you're thinking, oh, it would be nice. But the good thing about all the keto sweets and stuff is there's stuff there you can have. My daughter makes me some lovely stuff. So it's just, you tap into that. And I love, is it 95% chocolate? Is it?
Yeah. Well, I can. Louis nearly at 100% now.
Yeah, I didn't even know you could get 100%, but I'm on 95%, and it's, you know, I have that with some jelly and some cream and some crushed hazelnuts. And that's like the best thing ever.
The 100% basically just sucks all the moisture out of your mouth. I mean, you're not able to eat anything. That's why it's so good. It's like, okay,
yeah, you got black teeth. But that, I know that people are gonna think, well, yeah, but there is times when I go and do it, and there's a feeling that's driving it. There's a trigger that's driving it. And I've said this before. If you go to the cupboard to get whatever your contraband thing of choice is, biscuits or what, Chris or whatever it might be, just ask yourself the question: what is the feeling that's driving me here? And if you're really hungry and it's not emotional eating, because we talked about eating our emotions last night. But if you eat a boiled egg, you know, if you're hungry, think, would I eat a boiled egg now? And if the answer is no, then it's just purely emotion. So, and I said this last night, wouldn't it be better to just deal with the emotion, whatever the emotion is? Now, I think in my case, it's, and people will relate to this, sometimes it's just boredom. Sometimes it's just having that lonely moment where you think, I'm bored, or I've got nothing to do. What could I do now? I'll go. And I think my go-to thing now is, which is very keto, is and I said to you earlier on that I drink more coffee than I've ever drunk in my life. It's only 3 to 4 cups a day. And it's only, I'm only not doing decaf because I haven't got decaf in the house. But that to me is like the best thing ever. That's better than any Galaxy bar or Dairy Milk bar for me now.
If you want a good decaf, well, I'll send you a link. We have a filtered decaf. It's stunning. I mean, you don't, most decafs, you know you're drinking decaf, you know the taste isn't there. This stuff is absolutely stunning. So I'll send you a link. It's a fabulous company.
And I just remember something about self-sabotage. It's because I did like an acronym for it. I won't remember the acronym, but I'll say the fact that the self-sabotage is coming back from past things. It's past triggers. Yeah. It could be hypnotic things that's happened in your younger life or whatever. It's them conditions. And when it comes to the forefront, you act on it. And it's like you can't respond in the moment to that. You can't. That's why it's such a difficult thing to do. So you have to become more present. You have to. The only way you can fix this is in the moment.
Yeah.
And that responsive intelligence will go. I had it in the early days on ketosis. I think I've told this story before, where my son had some Jaffa cakes because I was off chocolate and I was buying him Jaffa cakes. And I love Jaffa cakes. And I looked at him, I'm hungry. Obviously, I was down on protein or something. I'm going to have a Jaffa cake. But because I was on an 18-hour fast, as in I wasn't going to eat till 12 o'clock the next day, that sort of, it jolted me in the presence. And I went, okay, just don't do it. So I made a conscious decision not to do it. And that's what you need. You almost need somebody, and some people say this, they hear my voice in the head, but you just need somebody to go like that. Don't do it.
And actually, I think that's why sometimes we do obviously these little, so I've just finished a sort of like a full day fast, so 40-hour fast, and we do them in the group and we do them as a little collective. Now, we don't check up on each other. We're not sending each other messages. We just say, who's in? And we just sort of post, you know, when we start it. And then I've just posted me coming out. And I think it is like that little bit of accountability, isn't it? But who are you accountable for apart from yourself? If I was to break my fast, you're not going to go, well, that's not, you know, I'm accountable myself, but I'm just letting everybody else know.
Yeah. And that's what I mean by insight and being accountable and being present. It's the most powerful thing you can have. So therefore it's your choice. It's your free will. It's massively powerful. And guess what? If somebody pulls you up about it, that can trigger loads of personal thinking.
And I was just going to say them, and that's the part of the post that I did this morning was about this is, you know, this is personal. The only person that should be telling you when to eat is you. Yeah. And following somebody else's beliefs around what they have and when they do this and when they do that actually isn't great for you, because that's probably not going to fit your lifestyle. And at the same time, you also going to get the people that go, well, that's not healthy, not eating. And again, that comes back from our conditioned thinking, doesn't it?
So. Yeah. And to me, I call them toxic goals. You set yourself up for an expectation. And if you set yourself for somebody else's expectation, wow, guess what? Stubbornness kicks in. I'm not going to do that. Rebellion kicks in. All the stuff we learned as teenagers is still inside you. You know, if somebody says, don't do something, if somebody gives you advice, well, do you take it? No, you don't take advice. You might have something that points to what you need to do. But at that moment, it's like getting hit in the face with a hammer, isn't it? When somebody says, you can't do that. And it triggers so many emotions in you. And that's all them. It's all them emotions that really give you a problem then, because then you think, how do I cope with these emotions that have just been triggered in me? Oh, guess what? I'm going to eat.
Yeah, because it goes all the way back to self-sabotage. Somebody says something about what you're doing. You think, well, okay. We're just renowned for it, aren't we? So sort of, we call it falling off the wagon sometimes. We don't fall off the wagon. We just choose to make a different choice at that particular time. without really thinking about how we're feeling or what it's going to make us feel. You know, I use the line that you often sort of say about how do you know how you're going to feel in even an hour's time? You know, we don't know when we're sort of waking up and go, I'm not hungry. Okay. So what does that mean? Well, that means that you're not hungry. You don't need to make anything out of it.
Yeah.
Well, when should I eat? Well, when you feel like you should eat. You don't know when that's going to come. And you shouldn't really try and force that either.
Yeah, and you, it's great you're using the word feel, because I see the balance of, like, you think something. You think you have to eat. You think you have to have breakfast. You think you have to stop this. You think it. But it's actually what you feel. And I've noticed since I've been on keto that I feel everything. Even if I have too many carbs in the form of vegetables, I can feel it in my body. I can actually feel it because I'm totally present with how it affects me. And everybody on this journey will, you know, those, you know, from how things, movement and stuff, and how things play out for them, they'll notice it. Whereas before, we used to just cram all the food in, eat what you wanted, and you didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
But now, because it's cleaner, and if you think about your thinking like that, if you get your thinking cleaner, if you drop out of it and you do less, I said this before, intermittent fast your thinking, really just,
yeah.
You know, get rid of the thinking, and then it just seems easy to be in touch with your emotions and with your feelings. I mean, you can't separate thinking from emotions. You can't separate it, but you can notice them more.
Your session last night about, was it eating your feelings?
Eating your emotions. Why do we eat our emotions?
Eating your emotions. I mean, that sparks a lot of conversation.
Mm.
Because, and it was like wildfire. As soon as somebody sort of put a comment in about, you know, this is exactly what they do, It was almost like the handbrake came off for everyone to go, do you know what? And that's where we are, aren't we? All of us, we all eat, you know, with our emotions. If we're not thinking about sort of the feelings that we're going to get from when we start eating the wrong things, we don't. You know, I know that if I go and eat a Mars bar, I'm going to feel like rubbish for a couple of hours. Therefore, I don't need to eat the Mars bar.
Yeah, and I said last night, I said, wouldn't it be great if you just put the effort. This effort that we do to mask our emotions, if we just put the effort into just feeling that emotion. And I don't mean reveling in it and ruminating in it, but just be honest with what it is. And we talk about self-sabotage, and I don't know if the thingy, but one of the things I say is, and you said falling off the wagon, and I say full stop. I say there's no therefore. Therefore, I must beat myself up for it. Therefore, I must feel guilty about it. Therefore, I must do these things about it. It's full stop. And it's just a wonderful thing to do. And if you do that with your thinking, a thought comes in. I don't like it. It's a bit of a negative thought. Okay, full stop.
Yeah.
And that's therefore you're not giving it the meaning to it. We're an emotional, we're an emotional animal. We're an emotional race, if you like. But we use our thinking computer to try and control something that should only really be felt. We should feel our emotions because they are sort of like, they're the rudder on our ship, you know. They steer us.
Have you ever read The Chimp Paradox? You must have.
I haven't. I've got the book. Somebody gifted it to me, and I haven't read it.
You know, I've got it on audiobook, and I implore everyone and anyone just the first chapter or something like that. Just read that, and it will just blow your mind to realize. I mean, it's a comical image of this chimp being in the control of your thinking, and every thought's got to get past the chimp before you make some sense of it. And the chimp's the one that reacts all the time.
Yeah.
But it's that thought, isn't it? It's that initial thought, I'm bored.
Yeah.
So the chimp goes, well, I know what you can go and do. You can go to the cupboard and you can go and get some biscuits out, and you can sit in the front of the TV, rather than letting the thought travel past the chimp, get to the adult brain or whatever it's called, and go, actually, I don't really need the biscuits. What I should do is maybe go, like, they were talking yesterday about sort of how to introduce new habits. Well, you know, having some sort of hobby, or, you know, whether it is, you know, we've got loads of people in the group now doing jigsaws and you know, it's all random stuff. Cooking, you know, there you go. Have a new hobby. Cook.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's what happens when you drop your reactive brain. You know, I do that thing with reactive. You take the C and put it in front of the reactive. It becomes creative. When you drop out of your thinking, and I only found out this late in life, we're all creative. We just don't know, you know, everybody's got something different to create. But that's what you fill the vacuum with. You know, your own, when your unconscious mind doesn't have to be on total fear mode. You know, we're not looking out for saber-toothed tigers, and we're not looking out for this. If we don't distort what does come in from the news or social media, and we don't distort it, then that place of no worry, that place of freedom to create, I can't believe this, but I've become more creative than I've ever done, and I don't have any expectations. I don't have any toxic goals with it, because when I do set the expectations, things start to build up a little bit of fear in me, so a little bit of thought into it. So I drop the expectations and I get more done. How's that possible? How is that possible?
Those expectations, we can set them, then we're scared of how we're going to get them. So we set the expectation of, you know, X amount of weight in X amount of months. Mm. But then suddenly the overwhelm is, oh my God, how am I going to do that?
Yeah.
Rather than just focusing on those daily things, those daily goals, i.e. wake up, feel how good you feel, you know, or what's the right term? Sense that good feeling and work with that, or sense the feeling, because it could be good or bad, couldn't it? You know, not everybody wakes up feeling great every morning. You know, you might wake up feeling a little bit crappy, but again,
and let me speak to that feeling crappy, because I've woke up and I've noticed, I thought, and this was a long time ago now, it's probably about 2 years ago now, I keep telling this story, but I just noticed I was in a bit of a low mood, and the sun was shining, and I just didn't give it any meaning. I didn't try and find out why I was in low mood. And I went and had a shower. When I came out of the shower, I noticed I was in a good mood, because I hadn't put any meaning to the low mood. And it was just, that's what you do. You just embrace the day, whatever it is. Don't be, your feelings are a barometer, and they will tell you, you know, what the weather's like outside, but it is only weather.
And this sort of goes back to sort of then, it's the last question, or it's one of the statements that was on the survey was, everyone blames themselves. I'm in my own way. I can't do it because I, you know.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, how do we get out of our own way? How do we, I talk about it as we find our own rhythm. So, you know, not trying to follow somebody else's eating pattern, style of eating, blah, blah, blah. So we find our own rhythm, but actually giving ourselves the permission.
Yeah.
Permission to eat, permission not to eat. You don't need somebody else's, just need yours.
Yeah. And sort of two things is, I love the statement from years ago that somebody said to me, says, you know, be yourself because everyone else is taken. Oh, yeah. Oh. And I like that and I've gone even further into it now that the worst thing you can do is identify with something, especially if it's not serving you. You know, it's like to say, I am a chocoholic.
Yeah.
Is identifying with it. When you, the first port of call is to not identify with it. There is chocolate. I can't say the best way, but I eat chocolate. It's not, I am a chocolate. Once you identify, it sets a pre-frame up and then you follow them rules. So I suppose what I'm trying to say is to get out of your own way, you even drop that identity, you drop the I, you drop the you. And I call it true nature. You talked about coming home. And that's what I say. I've come home to my playful, creative self. And I don't have any expectations, because you know why? My creativity is limitless and my expectation is limitless. So I couldn't even actually put anything on that. So to answer your question about getting out of your own way, it's almost like you just need to find something that works for you. It's, for me, it's like, I do not take myself seriously in my thinking. And I say, I now know I am the thinker and I don't care what I think. So if I don't care what I think, I'm not in my way. And I just show up and notice how I feel. And if it feels good, I do more of it. That's my only expectation in life. And that's, I call it playfulness. I call it joy. I call it inner peace. I can't have anxiety now because it just doesn't land. It doesn't land anymore. It's quite hard to explain.
No, I know what you mean. And obviously people sort of, they obviously worry about what other people think.
Yeah.
So they use that as a sort of as a reason why they stop themselves fulfilling what they might want to do it. They might want to, you know, I've had it for the past couple of days. I want to sort of carry on this fast, but my other half says it's not safe. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so they want to do something, but they're concerned about either hurting somebody else or falling. You know, we do worry when we change what we're doing, that how it's going to impact others.
Yeah, and when we talk about the seven A's, you know, we talk about on a Monday night, the seven A's to authenticity or aliveness. That's the word audacity for me. It's like I've got the audacity now to live life on my terms.
Yeah.
Not on someone else's terms. And we've been conditioned to thinking that's selfish. You need other people to survive in the world. And that's the unconscious cue, and that's born of fear. I cannot operate without other people. Well, that's not really true. Don't get me wrong, there's love and connection, there's social side of it, there's having a community like we've got. But if you know your boundaries, then it doesn't matter what someone thinks. Because you know what? If I don't care what I think,
yep.
why would I care about what somebody else thinks about what I think? Because it's both made up.
And it took me quite a while to get to that point of not worrying about what other people think. You know, even when we started this and we started to try and help people, we'd get the occasional message, email sort of saying, do you realize what you're doing is, and basically telling us that our lifestyle wasn't good for them.
Yeah.
You know, and we used to worry about that. We used to sort of get really concerned that somebody was offended by what we were doing. And now I don't think about it.
No,
because it's not their, it's not their life. It's mine. If I want to live like this, then I'm quite happy to live like this.
Yeah. And this is what I mean by new and afresh. Once you show up with life on your terms, you have to relearn it all as an adult, you know, and the good thing is if you drop your thinking, then you don't have to fight all the fears and conditioned thinking, the personal thinking, the insecure thoughts. You don't have to fight any of that.
It's like, I could have said to you 5 years ago, right, or you could have said to me, right, go and stand up in front of 100 people and go and talk about what you do. And I wouldn't have got two words out, and I would have, you know, been that nervous, shaking wreck at the front of the audience and literally not be able to say two words. And now I don't put any thought into the process of walking out in front of, you know, a crowd and effectively having a conversation with 100 or 200 people. I don't worry about what anyone's thinking anymore.
Yeah. And so going back to the original statement, you've taken the identity out of it. You've got out of your own way. And how you've done that, if you think about neurological levels, the one above identity is purpose, is passion.
Right.
And once you tap into your purpose and your passion, there is no, it's the one above identity. So when you make your passion green in life, you will make your identity green. You will make your values and beliefs green, which come in alignment with it. You will make your skills and capabilities, so all the things you know about keto, you'll make them go green. And then you make your behavior green. And then you make your environment green. So that's all the neurological levels. So when you turn the thing up high, the highest point, which is passion, which is outside of yourself, which is contribution to others, which is serving others. Once that's green, all the rest go green. But if you were down, let's say, in an environment where you were drinking, like you said earlier on, then that's red. And the only way you can change that is go up to the next level. You can only change what you're doing, your behavior, your environment, your skills and capability at the next level above it. So most people tap into their identity and they go, I need to be something new. I need to be someone on keto that is doing this and rocks up in the world like this. That's usually enough. But when you get to purpose and passion, oh my God, that lights everything up like a Christmas tree. And it just changes it all green.
I never thought about it in that sort of order, actually.
Yeah.
But with you talking about it, it makes sense because I change my sort of behaviours first for very sort of, well, yeah, I'd say selfish reasons, you know, make me feel better. And then I sort of began the journey of understanding and learning and sort of changing my skills. And then gradually we sort of changed into the passion, weren't we, of once we realized how much good it can do, you know, just within our own family, you know, reversing diabetes, you know, it's like, wow, okay, this can really help people. So I'd never thought about it in that sort of ladder form.
Yeah, well, it's dilts logical levels, and it's out there. You can see it, but it's actually an NLP technique. You can actually take people to who are stuck in some environment, and you have to take them up to their identity to get away from it.
Okay. So how can people use that then to help them on this journey?
Oh, I suppose no. I could maybe do a Monday night talk about it, and or I can you know.
It's interesting because I don't think many of us understand the step process.
Yeah, no, it's very
powerful.
I did
it without thinking about it. I did it without, you know, without sort of understanding what I was doing. I just, you know, I suddenly found my passion while I was on a beach in Turkey going, I've got to read as much as I possibly can about this particular thing. And I spent, you know, I spent every day ever since researching, listening, you know, talking about it every day ever since. I haven't had a single day off. You know, since somebody said to me that word keto, and I'm like, what? And now it's like, oh, my life. So, you know, I've gone through that process without even thinking about it. And I think if we were to sort of put that in front of people saying, look, here's, you know, a way that you can sort of project yourself to that passion to, you know, to get you like the authenticity you just talked about, find that authentic you.
Yeah. And that comes under, you know, on that context, that comes under identity. If people are identifying with the fact that you know they haven't got any self-worth or they haven't got any self-love and they identify with that, guess what, their behaviors are going to be around that, and their skills and capabilities around, you know, most people would, they would diet, they would, their skills and capabilities was going on a diet and trying to maintain something if it's in that sort of trying to cope with the stuff that they've done over the years. And just changing your identity is the most powerful thing. Some people don't need, you know, their family outside of themselves, their creativity outside of themselves can be enough. You don't need to have a massive, great, big purpose in life, but you need to let go of all the things. And that's what I mean by getting out the way of yourself. Let go of all of the things that stops you identifying with your aliveness, with your authenticity, with your true nature. And yeah, we can... We could even do it in context of an issue for somebody. And it's like almost a podcast in itself that you can do in neurological levels. It's a technique that you finish up with. And maybe I'll put you on the spot now. It's the question I would ask when you're at your purpose is, and that's like what for you? And that question will bring a metaphor. So when you're in your passion, everything's aligned, everything's green, you know, completely in contrast to your old environment of, you know, trying to drink away your issues and your problems. But now you're in that place where you've got your purpose and you've got your passion and you know your identity. They're all green. And that's like what for you? See if you come up with something. I'll help you if you don't.
Well, do you know, I'll probably two things. And one of them sounds really corny, but it feels to me like I make a difference. So a positive impact on somebody. So when I see it now on a daily basis, I see the impact that we've been having for 3 years, because yes, some people's journeys take a bit longer. Some people will do it in a short time, but when you see somebody, you know, there's a couple of the members, when you see them like Isabel, like Alison, who have achieved something, and you can see it in their posts, you can see it in their pictures, and you think, wow, we've been part of that journey. It's not because of me or because of us they've done it. It's because of them. And we've just sort of hopefully provided one of those steps.
You've created the environment for people. So when you're making a positive impact and you're making a difference, and that's like what for you? It's just one statement. And that's like what? Compare it to something when you feel just...
It's exhilarating. I get cold shivers down my spine when somebody posts things like that. It's like that is. I don't know the word to use, but it's just like.
Okay,
reward.
No, it's perfect. What you're saying, that's like what? It's like running 10 marathons. It's like standing on top of a mountain. That's the metaphor. When you feel like that. When people talk about self-sabotage and when they talk about the habits that keep them away from that, when you get to somebody that they go, oh, it's like just being on top of the world, you know, that's what you tap into for people. And that's what takes you away from self-sabotage and habits and conditioned thinking. So when I write poetry now, it's just like, and I want to teach people young what I learned late. That's what I want to do with my creativity going forward. And that's all in nutrition, movement, and people's thinking. You know, even though we talk to people who are almost stuck in their childhood, their childlike ways, because we sabotage and all that. That's all been learned as children. But when I do that, I just it feels like my shoulders are so powerful, I could run through any brick wall. That's what it feels like for me.
Yeah. Feeling indestructible.
Yeah, and when you feel indestructible, you ain't going to reach for something in the cupboard that's going to take that away.
No, you're dead right. Dead right. You know? If you're feeling indestructible, I don't need to wait for several days. You know, just high on the feeling.
Yeah, and when people let go of them emotions and them feelings that hold them back, made up of their thinking, made up where it's been conditioned or personal, it's the natural high of life is far greater than any other high of life that you get from tranquilization. It is, because when you're tranquilized, you're numb to the effects of it. But when you're high and you're on top of that mountain, or you're finishing the third marathon, you are so buzzing that you wouldn't do, in that mode, you wouldn't do anything. When you're that in that green state at the top of your pyramid, you wouldn't do anything to sabotage it.
We do see this in sort of, you know, both public and members group, when people invite their friends in, you know, so they're on their journey and they've had X success, whatever it is, you know. Right, so the dog just knocked over a stool. Right, get out of the way.
Which dog?
The big one.
Oh, okay.
That's why it fell over. It's a big stool and a big dog.
I know. I've been whipped by that tail. I know what it's like.
Yeah. It's just, all right, never mind. You see people sort of inviting their, you know, friends or, you know, family in to sort of come and join the group because they've had some success and they want to share that success with them. And they're sort of using their good feelings to say, you know, this might work for you. You might be able to feel like this, you know, it's just nice that when people get to a position where they go, well, I just want to share how I feel now.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they.
And I know we did the sort of the 5S and keto, and it is about sharing, it is about supporting. It's so powerful. And I always say in my thinking, it's not just thinking, but it's feeling. This is what you should do in life. This is a sort of, you should fill up with stuff, good stuff, kind stuff, grateful stuff. You should fill up and then you should give it away.
Yeah.
You give it away and then you're empty again. And then you fill up and you give it away. And that's tapping into that. And if you're doing that at a level of love and above, or identity and above, then it's so empowering for people. People see the authentic nature. And that's why you guys, so, you know, people latch onto it, and why so many members are coming to the public group and to the members group, is because they see you rocking up in this keto world as an authentic family who want to serve them. And I'm not saying that just to, I believe that 100%. And that's why I love being part of this. I love being part of it because it's helping people to not be stuck anymore.
Yeah. And yeah. The worst thing anyone can call is professional. We're very much homemade.
Yeah. Well, Archie just proved that.
Yeah. And he stood here now waiting for his lunch. I think that's what he was edging towards. Where's his bowl? Cause it's empty. You can wait a minute. And we'll wrap this up here because I know we could carry on this conversation for the next 3 or 4 hours, but we will break it up into we'll do another podcast very soon because there are always questions. And this topic of mindset, it's just the one that baffles us the most, I think. You know, as much as I can talk about macros and we can work out the specifics and, you know, we understand the food, understanding how our brain works is just beyond most of us.
And it's just because it's so seamless that our thinking, and I say this, it's our thinking that gives our experience in life. And I say that it doesn't matter what your circumstances are, whether they're really bad or whatever they are, they're not really what give you your experience in life. It's your thinking about them. And that's why it seems difficult. And we spoke last night again about what's a negative thought. Well, a negative thought is anything that comes into your head that takes you away from that good feeling. And people don't realize that. They think it's got to be something really dramatic. Mm. And then the unconscious mind gives it even more drama to make it seem like it's real. So you do something about it.
Yeah, even the fact that you haven't emptied the dishwasher. Negative thought. You're taking you away from the fact that you're relaxing and you're trying to get to sleep. Oh, I've not emptied the dishwasher. I've not emptied, not done this.
Yeah.
They're almost pointless thoughts as well.
But I have to say that you can't experience life without thought. So it's here. No. It's here to the day you die. So you might as well choose them wisely, is what I say.
And food.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you can't experience the benefits of keto if you keep sabotaging yourself with your thinking. So they're intrinsically connected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. No, so I'm conscious that you've got appointments this afternoon, so I need to need to let you go. So we will revisit. I mean, this podcast will go out in the next couple of days. We're coming towards the end of January, so we probably book one in within maybe at the end of February. Maybe at some point we'll be able to get together and do this face to face again rather than via Zoom. But what we will do is ask people to maybe potentially give us topics that they want to discuss, any questions that they want to ask. We'll try and cover them and do our best. If you just for anyone watching, listening, if you want to see more of Ian, then you've got your own YouTube channel, haven't you?
Yeah. That's great. My son set it up for me, and now I'm just putting lots of, because not everybody can see, because we don't stream the sort of Monday nights, but I've just taken out little snippets, two minute videos. So there's over 30 on there, and I'm just going to keep putting out there as free content, and hopefully people can go to it and subscribe and stuff. And then they'll get notifications of when I put a new video out.
Yeah. So there are various other ways as well. So obviously Ian's YouTube channel, he's having a new website built as well. So you'll be able to get more sort of information from Ian there. You can grab a quick one-to-one with Ian. Obviously you do one-to-one coaching as well. Again, if you want some testimonials on that, folks, go and have a look at his website and go and have a look at sort of like some of the comments in the public group that some of the members have left. And also Ian has mentioned a few times today, that Monday night is a conversation with Ian McGill. So this is one of our members' sessions. Couple of hours on a Monday. It's now a couple of hours, isn't it? They don't let you go early. But a couple of hours on a Monday night where, yes, you talk through and talk around sort of a topic, but it's more about getting into a conversation with people, isn't it?
Yeah, last night was brilliant because people were actually conversing with it. And the more juice comes out of the conversation, I really like that. And it's grown from when we first started to six people to now 60 people. So it's
60, 70. I mean, I'm not jealous because Ian gets the biggest crowd of the week. I was happy. I got 26 at low impact yesterday. 26 coming to the low impact session. It was brilliant. And that's what makes me feel really good.
Yeah.
It's to see people now engaging in, as you call it, it's mindset, movement and nutrition. Well, the one that was missing a little bit last year for us was the movement. Yeah. So we've now sorted that and we've got lots of movement sessions going on.
Well, it's all these people now that they haven't got anything to worry about. So they want to do something with their time. So they go and get fit.
And it's great because a lot of people worry about sort of being on camera, and now they've realized they can turn the cameras off, but now they don't want to turn the cameras off because they want to see everybody else. So, you know, it's again, having sort of 20, 30 people turning up to a fitness session is amazing. But yeah, if anyone is interested in more information from Ian, please go and reach out to him, YouTube. You'll find his email address on his website as well. But again, you can sort of attend one of his sessions every Monday within the members group. If you want details on that, send us a message. Right. Thank you very much, mate.
Excellent. Thank you.
Good to chat to you again.